Are you ashamed of the gospel? This is Carl Kosar from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we continue on our study of Paul's letter to the Romans by focusing our attention at Romans chapter 1, verse 16 through chapter 3, verse 20. To help us explore this important chapter of Romans, I've invited two of my colleagues to join me in the discussion, Dr. Bruce Johansson and Dr. Strako Stefanovic, who are professors of biblical studies here at Walla Walla University. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for joining me.
Welcome.
Today we come back to Romans. Last time we looked at simply the issue of Jew and Gentile, but today we come back to the letter itself, which kind of excites me. I like getting to the text itself. But Paul starts off with a rather strange statement. He says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel." Now, why would Paul start? I mean, this is not the introduction anymore. We're here at the beginning of the letter itself. Why would Paul say he's not ashamed of the gospel? I mean, would anyone have been ashamed of the gospel?
There, we know from graffiti later on that Christians were made fun of. And there was one graffiti found in Rome, Alexamenos graffito, and it depicts somebody hanging on a cross and with a donkey's head, and then another person bowing down to this person on the cross, and the little scratch in Greek, Alexander worships his god, or his
might. So mocking Christians
for
their worship of a man who was crucified.
And in a sense, if you should transpose the crucifixion into our modern culture today and replace it with an electric chair.
A big electric chair out in front of the church, right?
The electric chair, living in Walla Walla, we have the penitentiary. I guess it's not electric chair, it's the hanging.
Oh, yeah.
But somebody who died a criminal death is actually the Son of God? I mean, talk about strange.
For Jew or for Gentile?
For Jew or for Gentile, exactly. And then Paul talks about this in terms of he's not ashamed of it. It is the power of God.
So Paul gives us the answer right here why he's not ashamed.
Yes. I mean, it's just amazing. What has absolutely no power, which is total defeat in human eyes, for him it's the power of God.
So why is it so powerful?
Why is it so powerful?
This is interesting because, yes. You know, Paul, I think Dr. Stefanovic could comment on this too. Paul is really a Jewish rabbi. He is trained in the scriptures. And he does this, they call it diatribe. It's a technical term for an imaginary conversation partner where Paul will enter into dialogue. And so Paul says, "I'm not ashamed." And so the response is, well, you know, why not? Well, because it's the power of God. Well, why is it the power of God? And Paul says here, because in it, the righteousness of God is revealed. Now, what is so powerful about God's righteousness?
There's two little words that Paul adds in different places. For us. It was done for us. Otherwise, it's just a death. Martyr's death. They happened all the time. But this was done. This comes from Galatians. Chapter 3,
yes.
I guess. And it was done for us. That changes the whole thing. God's righteousness did this in Christ for us.
But I'm confused here because God's righteousness. Now, God's righteousness means that he is a righteous person in what he does. So that means when he comes to sinners, he must be righteous, and therefore he must condemn them for their sins. So how can God's righteousness, I mean, if I'm a criminal and I'm going to be tried at a court, knowing that the judge is righteous is not good news for me. So what's the good news about having God's righteousness?
When the judge pays your penalty, suddenly you get a whole different picture of what righteousness is about.
So here it's not righteous as a quality, but really righteous as a gift given to us.
It's a gift.
We who are sinners are given God's righteousness. It's powerful.
It's an act of the most powerful relational love. That changes lives.
Bethany, Martin Luther said that this was actually his least favorite verse in Romans. Now, your eyes have kind of bugged out at that.
Yeah.
That was before he understood it meant a gift.
Okay.
He said he'd come to this passage and say, well, what's good news about this? Because the fact that God's righteous is bad news for me. when he realized it was that gift, it fundamentally changed his picture of the book of Romans.
Powerful. He got the rest of the story.
He got the rest of the story. But now here we have our Old Testament colleague, Dr. Stefanovich, here, and we have a quotation from the Old Testament. He says, "For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written." There is our reference to the Old Testament. "The righteous shall live by faith." Where does this come from? What is Paul talking about?
It comes from one of the shorter books in the Old Testament, one of the minor prophets, the book of Habakkuk. Mm. And Habakkuk's ministry partly overlapped with Jeremiah's ministry. It was the time of the exile when a new power in the world was coming to rise, and it was Neo-Babylon. And Habakkuk learned from the Lord that the sins of his own people will be punished by this very power. So he asked God, how could he use someone who was very sinful to punish another sinner? And that were his people. And God basically describes the power of Babylon to carry out God's judgments. And at the time when Babylon was doing that, there was a lot of pride in its power. So the only way for someone who looked for refuge in God was to be faithful to God and to trust that Babylon, as power, would come someday to the end. Therefore, whenever we look around us and we see appearances going against what we believe and profess, those circumstances need to affirm our faith. We believe not always because of the appearances around us, but very often in spite of it.
That's profound.
That we have just talked about power, and I've been thinking most of the gods worshipped by ancient people, they were worshipped because of the power that they had. But how was that power expressed? We have just talked about a unique way in which God's righteousness was displayed through Christ's life, death, and resurrection.
You know, that's an interesting thought you bring up there. Do you think in Christian circles today that God is still powerful? I mean, we hear a lot about God's grace and God's mercy and his tenderness, but have we lost sight of maybe God's powerfulness, you think, today in the Western world?
It is very much possible. And also, I believe that very often we miss on this point because we forget the ways in which God's power is displayed and expressed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
For example, if I were to take some Old Testament prophecies, earthly powers, earthly entities, they grab power for themselves, and they oppress anyone who challenges them on that point. But we have the example of God who shares power with others. And in particular, the one in the likeness of human beings in Daniel 7, as soon as he gets the eternal power, he shares it with the saints of the Most High, and they reign together.
Interesting. So he's not assuming it all for himself, but he's giving his power.
The most startling statement is John 13, when Jesus came to understand that God gave him all power in the universe. What does he do? He gets a towel and basin and begins to wash the feet of his disciples. Can we see the power of God in that, right?
Yes.
We need that power in our lives as well.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting because Paul goes right back here and he mentions the gospel again, but then he has in verse 18 all the way down to chapter 3, verse 20, it seems like kind of bad news. He says, "For the wrath of God is revealed against all ungodliness and unrighteousness," just what opposite of God.
Yeah.
So what is this with God's wrath, and why would Paul bring up bad news here? I want to hear the good news.
Well, he gives the bad news first, because starting in chapter 3, verse 21, he starts with the good news. But I think what he's doing here is he is steamrolling everybody.
What do you mean?
Under sin, both Gentile and Jew. No Jew can say, "I'm circumcised, I'm of the people of God, I'm a cut above, I'm God's, part of God's people, I have extra status."
But no, weren't they?
They did, but they were all sinners. And unfortunately, the blessings were turned into status symbols. kind of religious status symbols, and he has to level them so that then he can apply grace to both Jewish Christians and Gentiles, both Jews and Gentiles.
So I guess we could say that the stars are always brightest when the night is black,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
and dark outside.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting, too, because here Paul actually addresses the Gentiles first.
He does, yes.
So I can just imagine that as he goes through this list and talks about the immoral behavior that was seen in the ancient world, that the Jews were, you know, saying, Paul, you got it right here. You really give it to him, Paul.
Yeah.
But then he kind of
suddenly
plays a trick on them.
They get pulled in, right?
He learned it from Amos and other Old Testament prophets who love to do it.
Yes.
Go around the surrounding nations by one, get a lot of approval, and then say, all right, let's clean up our own house now.
Yeah. I really like chapter 2, verse 1 when he says, therefore, you have no excuse. And they're thinking, the Gentiles have no excuse. But then he says,
you too.
You who judge.
I have no excuse. Yeah. There's one thing about the wrath of God that I think we mustn't pass over here. Most often people get a picture of God as wrathful, a scary ogre. They have to appease him.
Kind of like Jonathan Edwards' famous sermon, right? Sinners in the hand of an angry God.
Sinners in the hand of an angry God, sort of thing. It's interesting how God deals with these people, and there's egregious stuff that they do. Mm. Three times. It doesn't say that God hammered them. God let go. Hmm. He gave them up.
Now, how is that wrathful?
He let the consequences of people's choices bear fruit. Hmm. They had to take the consequences of what they chose to do.
So they wanted a life without God's presence,
and so he
gave them what they wanted.
Yeah. They wanted gods they could control, idols. They wanted a lifestyle that they could take total license and control. And so he says, okay, you've made your choices. He let go.
So he took out the barrier so there was no more restraint upon sin, and so sin consumes them.
Yeah, and sin was shown to be utter sin.
So here we can say that, in one sense at least, God's wrath here is pictured as passive in nature.
Yeah.
We know in the end it's very active.
It's very active.
But once again, it's the full picture here of God's wrath.
I think it's a good thing to note that.
No, I appreciate that. So Paul goes all the way down through chapter 3. He begins kind of the same material again down in chapter 3, verse 9. And he has this interesting Old Testament connection. We need to go back with this with Dr. Stefanovic. He lists verses 11 down through 18, a series of quotations from the Old Testament to prove that both Jews and Greeks are all under sin. Can you tell us what's so important about this collection of scriptures?
In several places in the Old Testament, we have the statements that all human beings are sinful. And Paul is here referring to the two Psalms. We also have similar statement from King Solomon, who in his prayer said, for there is no one who does not sin, which points to the fact that even in the Old Testament, God was the only one who could justify the person and who could make the believer holy. And I think there is a misconception that in the Old Testament, the person justifies oneself and makes holy, but no, it's God.
Gentlemen, we've run out of time. Thank you again for your comments, and I hope for you and for readers that we can experience God's power in our own lives. I also want to thank Rebecca Hannon for her help and technical assistance. For Good Word, I'm Carl Kosar.
You can listen to this show again and catch up on previous weeks by going to the Positive Life Radio website, plr.org. Look under Programs for Good Word, and from there you can get to the official Good Word website. You can download programs or order them on CD. You can find out more at plr.org.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.